This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers. This is WGNS Action Line.
Since 1947.
It's now time for the Rutherford County District Attorney Show.
Retired Assistant District Attorney J. Paul Newman takes you on a judicial journey through our court system, where we'll learn about cold cases, current court cases, grand jury indictments, and more.
Here's host J. Paul Newman.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS. We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-host today, Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. In the ever-popular What's the Law segment, Trevor Lynch will discuss an area of the law that dramatically impacts our community. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City. Come do business with my family. You'll find us at 919 Northwest Broad Street right here in Murfreesboro. As your local pet store, we're here to build relationships. That's just one of the reasons that we've been a staple of the Murfreesboro community for more than 34 years. Come see why Animal City is the trusted choice for pet owners all across town. Visit us today at 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro. You can also find us on Instagram at AnimalCityTN.
Hi, I'm Larry Castelli, and I love living at Adams Place. I do exercise. I go 3 times a week. I go to stretch and balance, always conscious of your needs. It's not that someone is telling you what to do, it's they're looking out for you. It's a good workout.
And what about the food?
Give me a break. There's so much food here. I would highly recommend Adams Place.
The Rutherford County District Attorney Show, featured on the Action Line the first Friday of each month. And now here's the host, retired Assistant District Attorney J. Paul Newman.
For over a decade, on the first Friday of each month, the Rutherford County District Attorney General's office has been honored to have been provided airtime as part of the Action Line program. During our broadcast, it is our goal to help keep the community up to date on events occurring in the criminal justice system within our community. I believe one of the most important functions of our program is to keep the community aware of unsolved criminal activity that has plagued our community, especially unsolved murders. As part of that function, it has been my honor to bring to you many of Rutherford County's criminal justice success stories as well. I believe there is no greater success than when our criminal justice system works to solve, prosecute, and convict someone who is guilty of the crime of murder. The success is even greater when the case had remained unsolved for over a decade or more. On today's program, we will examine the problems and the issues involved in investigation and prosecution of these unsolved homicides. And we will also discuss why it is so important that we never forget any unsolved murder. Joining me in this discussion will be former Rutherford County District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr. And Bill and I will be joined by former Rutherford County cold case detectives Bill Sharp and Dan Goodwin as we discuss the illustrious and proud history of cold case investigations in Rutherford County. We welcome now to the WGNS microphones, retired District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr., and his two special guests, retired cold case detectives, Bill Sharp and Dan Goodwin.
Bill and Dan, when we talk about the cold case unit and the success it's had, I think it all starts with Truman Jones.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And if you would kind of tell the audience about how it began and what it had evolved into.
How it started is obviously with the Laura Salmon homicide case, and that was in 2001 when the arrest was made. Shortly thereafter, obviously we had success with it, with you prosecuting and Jay Paul doing a great job on that. But Sheriff Jones asked us if we would be interested in starting a cold case unit. Obviously, when we started it bare. We had no idea what we were doing or how we were going about it. But Truman was instrumental in setting that path for us. So it basically started with the Laura Salmon case and then sort of expanded from there.
Remembering the Salmon case and, of course, having prosecuted it, I know it was a case that haunted the sheriff's department, the original detectives that investigated it, my predecessor, Guy Dotson. I know within the DA's office, when I was an assistant, it was reviewed several times, and I know that the sheriff's department reviewed it several times also. And I guess the moral of that story is don't ever give up and good things will happen.
Absolutely. You know, when Dan and I do in services, we often talk about this. In the way we classify it, it's the day that Murfreesboro lost its innocence.
Yep.
They've had murders before, but this was a young girl, teenager. And, you know, I can't say enough about Miss Hammondtree, who is Laura's mother. That, as you know, she probably wore you out with phone calls and Guy Dotson Sr. as well. So it is never give up.
Yep. And I can recall when I first took office as a district attorney, either the day of or the day after she was in my office about this case. And it was certainly a great satisfaction to all of us that we could finally convict Mr. Gilley of that homicide. Tell us about how do you pick a case to start working on?
And we had no training in it. Bill had worked on a couple of murders before this. I'd never worked a murder. So we went at it from the position of trying to tell the story of why. Bumbled on the good ways to do it and even invented some other stuff ourselves.
Well, certainly technology and the advancements in technology can sometimes be key in these cases. But my experience and working with you all and on all cold cases, it's really a dedication and what some might call gumshoe detective work, re-interviewing witnesses, tracking witnesses down.
What we find with a lot of other cold case units across the country that we've reached out to when we were in the learning phase, we are very fortunate because we had an administration supervisors that supported this endeavor. It's expensive, and we understand that. There's times that we've taken trips that the interviews turned out to be, I don't want to say worthless, but not what we expected. So we've been fortunate on that aspect is being supported by the administrations over the years to continue supporting this. And I think out of the list of cases that we had before us, there may be two. If you see more, let me know, that really involved DNA. Everything else that we did was, like you said, General, was getting out and interviewing people.
I will say this, though. I don't think the cold case unit would have ever happened unless we'd had blood spatter evidence and DNA in the Salmon case.
And I think the other thing that's important here, you know, obviously the victims, but the families of the victims, you know, we work closely with all these families. You build a relationship with these families, and some of the families that we've spoken to said, you know, they just want something done, and they realize the obstacles that are faced by working these cold cases, lost evidence and so forth, witnesses and suspects. But we had one tell us one time, you know, just going to bat, even if we swing and miss, the fact that we took it and let a jury decide.
I want to tell you that working with you guys was a real honor. I'm just happy that these cases don't go away, that people are always working. And as you stated, if you have any information on the case, please contact the Sheriff's Department. And I congratulate you on your success.
I want to thank you and General Newman for the years that you put in with us as well. I think we made a fine team and couldn't have done it without you, obviously. So thank you.
People in this county should know they have probably the finest prosecutors in the state of Tennessee. And despite our smaller size, some of the highest court rate and a great conviction ratio here.
We want to thank our guests, Major Bill Sharp and Sergeant Dan Goodwin of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office.
The monthly District Attorney Show, heard the first Friday of each month, exclusively on News Radio WGNS.
On a previous broadcast,
Bill Weitzel spoke on why our community should be willing to come forward and help solve an unsolved murder. Listen now to Bill's perspective.
Paul, you know this. It's very important on these cases as they get age on them. We want people to know that we don't forget about them. We've got somebody out there that's a murderer. And I know people are sometimes fearful. They're afraid if they give information or something that something may happen to them. And certainly I can understand that. But we need people to come forward and put a violent person behind bars. If this person is arrested and charged and convicted, everybody knows that. And hopefully it would make somebody think twice about taking a human life. So it's dedication on the part of the police and the investigators, but it's also a dedication on the part of our citizens to be a part of the process, because without them, we cannot pursue, arrest, and prosecute these cases. And they're responsible just as much in a way as the police are for making their community a safer place. So I would certainly urge anyone with any information on cases to come forward.
This is Paul Newman. We will be asking for your help in solving a mystery in our Cold Case Profile. You are listening to this special edition of The Action Line on WGNS.
A search for truth.
Here's host J. Paul Newman.
We all owe three debts. First, to each other, to help make our community safer. Second, to our family, especially our children, to set a good example of what a good citizen does to help the community. And finally, we owe a debt to the seemingly forgotten victims of homicide, a debt that can only be paid with truth and justice.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
One of the toughest cases for law enforcement to solve is one where a decomposed body is found and no identification can be located. If it is a male body, the body is simply referred to as John Doe. If it is a female body, they are referred to as Jane Doe. This case involves the death of someone who we can only refer to as Jane Doe. It was November the 14th, 2007, when Detective Bob Hayes of the Laverne Police Department discovered the body of Jane Doe. At the time, Detective Hayes was searching for the body of another completely unrelated murder victim. That victim was Nikki Cicino. As Detective Hayes searched the woods for Nikki Cicino's body, he made an unexpected and gruesome discovery. Detective Hayes saw what first appeared to him to be animal bones, but upon closer examination, the remains were identified as human, and the remains appeared to be female. The body was badly decomposed, and no identification was located. To make matters worse, the victim's face could only be described as unidentifiable. From that day forward, the body has been referred to as Jane Doe. Her death was indeed a homicide. The cause of her death was a gunshot wound. Experts estimated that Jane Doe's body had been in the field between 4 and 6 months. Here is what is known about Jane Doe. Jane Doe wore jewelry, including an Avon necklace with cat imprints. She also had a ring with amber and emerald-colored stones. Also, forensic artists prepared composite drawings of what they believe Jane Doe may have looked like when she was alive. As a result of all of the investigative efforts, the following information has been assembled. At the time of her death, Jane Doe is believed to have been between 25 and 45 years of age. She was between 5'2" and 5'9" tall. Her hair appears to be dark colored and curly.
her race was not able to be confirmed. One of the strongest leads is that Jane Doe had a lot of dental work. Her dental x-rays have been sent to dentists around the state. The Laverne Police Department has worked for many years trying to identify the body of Jane Doe. Those vast efforts have yielded some information, but Jane Doe's true identity remains a mystery. Now, law enforcement once again is asking for your help. If you have information about the identity of Jane Doe or who may have killed her, please contact the Laverne Police Department. The number to call is 615-793-7744. That number again is 615-793-7744. If you wish to review the information regarding Jane Doe, or view the jewelry that Jane Doe was wearing, or view the artist's drawings of how they believe Jane Doe would have appeared when she was alive, go to the internet and simply type in Jane Doe Laverne. A family somewhere has been missing a loved one, and the person or persons who murdered Jane Doe remain free to murder again. Please help us catch a killer.
If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website.
This is Paul Newman. When we return, we will all go inside the courts. You are listening to this special edition of The Action Line on WGNS.
In today's changing world, you need a financial planner that you're comfortable with. Rely on the bonds that you've built with trusted friends at Old National Bank on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard here in the borough. And if you just moved here, visit us and enjoy warm, homemade cookies.
Honey, the cookies are ready.
Like Grandma used to make. Old National Bank. We're better together.
2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard. Old National Bank, member FDIC.
Hi, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Family Restaurants. Did you know that Demas's now can cater events? We can ship most of our pastas and we can deliver it to your door. If you're interested in our catering, you can go to demasrestaurants.com and click on the menus on catering to see what options we have available for your next event. Demas's Family Restaurants, go to demasrestaurants.com. Demas's Family Restaurants on 1115 Northwest Broad Street.
This is Inside the Courts, a look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Here's Assistant DA Trevor Lynch.
Good morning, everyone. This is Assistant District Attorney General Trevor Lynch, and today I will be your tour guide through this episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that the defendants named in upcoming trials or hearings have not been convicted, and they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On October 13th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired at a residence on Las Casas Pike in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered Mr. Jaleel Turner lying unresponsive on the floor of his apartment, suffering from a gunshot wound to the abdomen. Mr. Turner later died from his injuries. Detective William Pulius was assigned as lead investigator. On scene was Miss Shakira Brown, who lived in the residence with Mr. Turner. Miss Brown was in a romantic relationship with Mr. Turner at the time. After the collection of evidence on scene and a subsequent interview of Miss Brown, she was charged with the second-degree murder of Mr. Turner. The defendant is represented by counsel Mr. Tommy Overton, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. This matter is next scheduled for appearance in the General Sessions Court on May 7th of this year. On October 27th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to an emergency assist where a man identified as Mr. Harold Cruz had sustained injuries to the head. Mr. Cruz was awake but unable to respond to questions. He eventually slipped into a coma and died from his injuries. An investigation resulted in locating video footage showing Mr. Cruz sleeping behind a convenience store close to where Mr. Cruz was found. While sleeping, an unknown individual approached Mr. Cruz, shook him awake, and then struck him in the head with a large rock. Detective Matthew Coe was assigned as lead investigator. The investigation led to other videos being obtained from nearby stores, which allowed detectives to identify Mr. Clinton Johnson as the person that attacked Mr. Cruz. Mr. Johnson was located and interviewed and admitted to attacking and robbing Mr. Cruz. Mr. Johnson was charged with first-degree murder. On January 24th of this year, Mr. Johnson appeared before the General Sessions Court of Rutherford County and bound his case over for presentment to a grand jury. Mr. Johnson is represented by the Office of the District Public Defender, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. On April 13th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired on South Rutherford Boulevard in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered the body of Mr. Paul Howe on the roadway. Mr. Howe had been shot in his throat. Mr. Howe died as a result of his injury. Detective Andrew Stahlnecker was assigned as lead investigator. Also on scene was Mr. Brian Craig, a friend of Mr. Howe's. Mr. Craig had sustained a single gunshot wound to the arm. Witnesses to the shooting reported a road raid incident where Mr. Howe and Mr. Craig were nearly run off the road by an unknown driver. All parties came to a stop at a red light, and a verbal altercation led to shots being fired from the unknown driver. Almost 30 minutes after the incident was reported, Mr. Joseph Gann called 911 to report that he was the shooter. Mr. Gann was interviewed along with multiple witnesses. At the conclusion of the initial investigation, Mr. Gann was charged with second-degree murder, attempted second-degree murder, and reckless endangerment. Mr. Gann is represented by counsel Mr. Josh Crane. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On June 20th of last year, this case was bound over by agreement to be presented to a Rutherford County grand jury. In March of this year, a Rutherford County grand jury indicted Mr. Gann for second-degree murder, attempted second-degree murder, 7 counts of aggravated assault, 4 counts of reckless endangerment, tampering with evidence, employing a firearm during a dangerous felony, possession of a weapon with the intent to go armed, and reckless driving. On May 15th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call of shots fired at a gas station on Joe B. Jackson in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Officers discovered the body of Mr. Devin Lortz. Mr. Lortz had been shot multiple times in the back and died from his injuries. Officers also located Mr. Eric Mitchell, the brother of Mr. Lortz. Mr. Mitchell had been shot once in the arm and had been beaten across his head, face, and body. Also on scene were Mr. Juan Charco and his brother. The altercation was captured on video surveillance. Detective William Pulis was assigned as lead investigator. Upon conclusion of the investigation, officers discovered that Mr. Charco and his brother were in the process of illegally transporting a vehicle that was owned by Mr. Lovitz from Atlanta, Georgia to Nashville, Tennessee, without Mr. Lovitz's knowledge or consent. Mr. Lovitz and his brother, Mr. Mitchell, confronted Mr. Charco and his brother, and they took the vehicle back at gunpoint. Mr. Lortz and Mr. Mitchell were attempting to drive away in their own vehicles. Mr. Charco retrieved a semi-automatic rifle and shot over 25 times at the two men. Mr. Charco was charged with second-degree murder and attempted second-degree murder. This matter has been bound over by agreement. A Rutherford County grand jury indicted Mr. Charco for first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, aggravated assault, tampering with evidence, theft of property, reckless endangerment, and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. The defendant is represented by the Office of the District Public Defender, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. This matter is next scheduled to appear before a circuit court on May 14th of this year. On February 15th of 2023, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired at an apartment complex on Puckett Creek Crossing. Officers discovered the body of Miss Rebecca Stockton on the floor of her apartment. Miss Stockton had been shot multiple times. Detective Julie Cox was assigned as lead investigator. Miss Stockton's live-in boyfriend, Salim Hamilton, was missing. A search for Mr. Hamilton was ordered, and Mr. Hamilton was located in Corbin, Kentucky. Mr. Hamilton was found to be in possession of the rental car of Miss Stockton and a .40 caliber handgun. Miss Stockton was shot and killed by a .40 caliber handgun. Mr. Hamilton was charged with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon by the Kentucky authorities. Mr. Hamilton has been charged with first-degree murder by the Murfreesboro Police Department and was extradited back to Tennessee from Corbin, Kentucky. A preliminary hearing was held on January 4th of last year, and the General Sessions Court bound the case over for presentment to a Rutherford County grand jury. In May of last year, the defendant was indicted for first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and employing a firearm during commission of a felony. The state will be represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel. The next court date is scheduled for April 17th of this year. On February 13th of 2023, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call in reference to a stabbing at a residence on Ransom Drive. Upon entry, officers discovered the body of Mr. Philip Maddox on a bedroom floor. Mr. Maddox had been stabbed multiple times. A witness on scene advised that Mr. Maddox's roommate, Malik Smith, admitted to stabbing Mr. Maddox. Officers located Mr. Smith, and Mr. Smith confirmed the witness's claim that he stabbed Mr. Maddox. Detective David Miller of the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as lead investigator. After the search of the residence, collection of evidence, and interviewing all witnesses, Mr. Smith was charged with first-degree murder. On May 31st of 2023, a preliminary hearing was held, and the court found probable cause to bind the matter over to the grand jury. In February of last year, the grand jury indicted Mr. Smith for first-degree murder, carrying a weapon with intent, and the next scheduled court date is April 8th of this year. Mr. Smith is represented by counsel Ms. Whitney Rocky, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On May 18th of 2022, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a call of shots fired at the tennis courts on campus at Middle Tennessee State University. Officers responded and located two gunshot victims, Mr. Sonny Brewer, who later died from his injuries, and Mr. Xavion Amos, who survived his injuries. Detective David Miller was assigned as lead investigator. Through witnesses on scene and the assistance of MTSU security cameras, detectives were able to identify several young males enter the tennis courts just after the graduation ceremony for Riverdale High School. Two of the individuals, Mr. Brewer and Mr. Amos, had agreed to fight. The fight was observed by four other males, including Mr. Dante Martin, a friend of Mr. Amos. During the course of the fight, Mr. Martin pulled a handgun and began to fire into the fight, striking Mr. Brewer multiple times, as well as his friend, Mr. Amos. Subsequently, Mr. Martin was charged as a juvenile with first-degree murder and attempted second-degree murder. The state petitioned the juvenile court to transfer Mr. Martin to adult court and be allowed to prosecute Mr. Martin as an adult. A hearing was held in the juvenile court, and the court agreed to transfer Mr. Martin to adult court. In December of 2023, Mr. Martin was indicted for first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, aggravated assault, reckless endangerment, possession of a firearm on school property, employing a firearm during a dangerous felony, and reckless endangerment. On March 20th of this year, Mr. Martin entered pleas of guilty to second-degree murder and aggravated assault and received a total sentence of 15 years to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Martin was represented by counsel Mr. Jacob Findley, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. On May 31st of 2021, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a call regarding a vehicle on fire and reported gunshots. Officers on scene located a burning vehicle with at least one occupant inside. The occupant was later identified as 18-year-old Taya Bryant. Shortly after responding to the call, authorities were notified of two young males that were in the vehicle with Ms. Bryant at the time. Detectives were sent to interview the males. On scene, crime scene technicians located multiple casings from different firearms. The area was canvassed and officers were able to locate video footage from a resident's home security system. Additional video footage was later discovered at a gas station down the road from the shooting. An autopsy revealed that Ms. Bryant died as a result of a gunshot wound to the head, although her body was extensively burned as a result of the vehicle catching fire. Through interviews of the two males, police learned one of the males had an argument with his girlfriend, Donzelay Hambler. As a result of the argument, the male took her phone and refused to give it back. Ms. Bryant and Ms. Hamler were friends at the time, and when Ms. Bryant learned of the situation, she was able to contact Ms. Hamler in an attempt to return her phone. However, Ms. Hamler had gone to her brother, Dontorius Hamler, and told him that her boyfriend stole her phone and assaulted her. Mr. Hamler got at least one or two other unknown males to go with him in Ms. Hamler's vehicle to meet the boyfriend, who was with Ms. Bryant and the other male. Video footage shows Ms. Hamler's car pull into the gas station and park. Then it backs out of the parking spot and leaves the gas station. Ms. Hamler's vehicle is then followed by Ms. Bryant's vehicle. Shortly thereafter, home security video shows that the two vehicles traveling down Leaf Avenue. Gunshots are heard and a crime scene reconstruction showed that the lead vehicle, Ms. Hamler's car, opened fire on Ms. Bryant's vehicle, striking the vehicle multiple times and Ms. Bryant once in the head. The video shows the two males from her car running away on foot. Witnesses from earlier in the night placed Ms. Hamler and Mr. Hamler inside the vehicle 30 minutes to an hour before the shooting, along with one to two other individuals. Both Mr. and Ms. Hamler were charged as juveniles with first-degree murder of Ms. Bryant and the attempted first-degree murder of the two males. The state petitioned the juvenile court to transfer both Hamlers to adult court. However, prior to the hearing, both Mr. and Ms. Hamler agreed to be transferred to adult court without a hearing. In February of 2023, both Mr. and Ms. Hamler were indicted on charges of second-degree murder, two counts of attempted second-degree murder, four counts of aggravated assault, employing a firearm during an offense, and reckless endangerment. The Hamlers were represented by counselors Mr. Ben Wetzel and Ms. Jennifer Fiola. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. After consulting with Ms. Bryant's family, an agreement was reached, and on February 20th of 2025, both Hamlers entered pleas of guilty to facilitation to second-degree murder and two counts of attempted second-degree murder. They each received effective sentences of 10 years to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Correction. The investigation continues as to the identity of the remaining assailants. And that concludes our look inside the court.
What's the law? Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Good morning, listeners, and thank you for joining us today in this episode of What's the Law? This morning, I'm going to discuss Tennessee Rules of Criminal Procedure Rule 29, Motion for Judgment of Acquittal. Rule 29 empowers the trial judge to direct a judgment of acquittal when the judge determines that the evidence is insufficient to warrant a conviction, either at the time the state rests or at the conclusion of all of the evidence. So what is a judgment of acquittal? In simple terms, it is when the judge determines that the state did not present enough evidence to establish the guilt of the defendant and that no rational jury would convict the defendant. The legal standard by which the judge determines a motion for judgment of acquittal is the same standard that applies on appeal when determining the sufficiency of the evidence after conviction. That being, whether after viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution, any rational trier of fact could have found the essential elements of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. Rule 29B states that the grounds for a judgment of acquittal, which are on defendant's motion or the court's own initiative, the court shall order the entry of a judgment of acquittal on one or more offenses charged in the indictment, presentment, or information after the evidence on either side is closed, if the evidence is insufficient to sustain a conviction of such offense or offenses. A judgment of acquittal is not an all or nothing proposition. A court may grant a judgment of acquittal as to a higher charge and proceed on a lesser included offense. So if the judge believes that the evidence is not sufficient to allow a rational trier or a rational jury to convict for the charge of first degree murder, the judge on his or her own can order a judgment of acquittal on the first degree murder and instruct the state to proceed on the lesser charge of second degree murder. When deciding on a motion for judgment of acquittal, the trial judge is only to be concerned with the legal sufficiency of the evidence and not with the weight of the evidence. The court must view the evidence in the light most favorable to the state. When a motion for judgment of acquittal is made, the trial court must favor the state with the strongest legitimate view of the evidence, including all reasonable inferences to be drawn therefrom, and must discard any countervailing evidence. The trial court must disregard any evidence introduced by the accused that conflicts with the evidence introduced by the accused, that conflicts with the evidence adduced by the state, and afford the state with the strongest legitimate view of the evidence, including all reasonable inferences which may be drawn from the evidence. In other words, the court must basically look at it like everything the state said is correct, and nothing that the defense says matters. In viewing it from that light, could any rational person look at this and find the essential elements have been met? Rule 29D states that if a motion for judgment of acquittal is made at the close of all of the evidence, the court may reserve decision on the motion, submit the case to the jury, and decide the motion, either before the jury returns a verdict, so during deliberations, or after it returns a verdict of guilty, or after it is discharged without having returned a verdict, as in a hung jury. The trial judge is empowered to direct a judgment of acquittal when the evidence is insufficient to warrant a conviction, either at the time the state rests or at the conclusion of all the evidence. If the state disagrees with the judge's decision, what can the state do if the judge grants a judgment of acquittal at the time the state rests? The simple answer is nothing. Absolutely nothing. However, if the judge reserves his or her decision to grant a judgment of acquittal until after the jury reaches a verdict of guilty, then the state can appeal that decision to the Court of Criminal Appeals for their review. And if the judge grants a judgment of acquittal either during deliberation or upon a jury not being able to reach a verdict, as in the hung jury, then that has the same effect as if it was ordered after the state rests its case. No appeal. The state has no recourse. So Tennessee Rules of Criminal Procedure Rule 29, judgment of acquittal, is an example of the absolute power given to the trial judge, one that should be used sparingly and only when it is clear that the evidence is insufficient to support a conviction. This has been a brief glimpse into Rule 29 of the Rules of Criminal Procedure. Thank you for joining us this morning. Stay safe and God bless.
Hi, this is Dan at Music World and Drummer's Den. If you need music gear, Music World and Drummer's Den is where you need to be. We have more guitars than anybody in town. We have all stringed instruments. We've got it all. We have keyboards as well. Do we have drums? We are Music World and Drummer's Den. We also have an excellent choice of used equipment. We are Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street, across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
The monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
As we end our program today, we thank our producer, Scott Walker. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening.
If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website.
We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my co-host, Trevor Lynch, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.